Osho. And the Flowers Showered. Talks on Zen. Discourse number 5. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Of one. At the death of a parishioner, Master Dogo, accompanied by his disciple Zengen, visited the bereaved family. Without taking time to express a word of sympathy, Zengen went up to the coffin, rapped on it, and asked Dogo, "Is he really dead?" "I won't say," said Dogo. "Well," insisted Zengen, "I'm not saying, and that's final," said Dogo. On their way back to the temple, the furious Zengen turned on Dogo and threatened, "By God, if you don't answer my question, why, I'll beat you." "All right," said Dogo, "beat away." A man of his word, Zengen slapped his master a good one. Sometime later, Dogo died, and Zengen, still anxious to have his question answered, went to the master, Sekiso, and, after relating what had happened, asked the same question of him. Sekiso, as if conspiring with the dead Dogo, would not answer. "By God," cried Zengen, "you too?" "I'm not saying," said Sekiso, "and that's final." At that very instant, Zengen experienced an awakening.
Life can be known, death also, but nothing can be said about them. No answer will be true. It cannot be. By the very nature of things, life and death are the deepest mysteries. It will be better to say that there are not two mysteries, two aspects of the same mystery, two doors of the same secret, but nothing can be said about them. Anything you say, you will miss the point. Life can be lived. Death also can be lived. There are experiences. One has to pass through them and know them. Nobody can answer your question. How life can be answered or death? Unless you live, unless you die, who is going to answer it? But many answers have been given. And remember, all answers are false. There is nothing to choose. It is not that one answer is correct and other answers are incorrect. All answers are incorrect. There is nothing to choose. Experience. Not answers can answer it. So the first thing to be remembered when you are near a real mystery, not a riddle created by man. If it is a riddle created by man, it can be answered, because then it is a game, mind game. You create the question, you create the answer. But if you are facing something which you have not created, how can you answer it? How a human mind can answer it? It is incomprehensible for the human mind. The part cannot comprehend the whole. The whole can be comprehended by becoming whole. You can jump into it and be lost, and there will be the answer. I will tell you one anecdote. Ramakrishna loved it to tell. He used to say, once it happened, that there was a great festival near a sea on the beach. Thousands of people were gathered there, and suddenly they all became engrossed in a question: whether the sea is immeasurable or measurable, whether there is a bottom to it or not, fathomable or unfathomable. By chance, one man made of salt completely was also there. He said, "You wait and you discuss, and I will go into the ocean and find it out. Because how one can know unless one goes into it?" So the man of salt jumped into the ocean. Hours passed and days passed, and now months were passing, and people started to go their homes. They waited long enough, and the man of salt was not coming back. The man of salt, the moment he entered the ocean, he started melting. And by the time he reached to the bottom, he was not. He came to know, but he couldn't come back. And those who didn't know, they discussed long. They may have arrived to some conclusions, because mind loves to reach conclusions. Once a conclusion is reached, mind feels at ease. Hence so many philosophies exist. All philosophies exist to fulfill a need. The mind asks, and the mind cannot remain with the question, it is uneasy. To remain with the question, one feels inconvenient. The answer is needed. Even if it is false, it will do. Mind is put at rest. And to go and take a jump into the sea is dangerous. And remember, Ramakrishna is true. We are all men of salt as far as the ocean is concerned. The ocean of life and death. We are men of salt. We will melt into it because we come out of it. We are made by it, of it. We will melt. The mind is always afraid to go into the ocean. It is made of salt. It is bound to dissolve. It is afraid. So it remains on the bank, discussing things, debating, arguing, creating theories. All false. Because they are based on fear. A courageous man will take the jump, and he will resist to accept any answer which is not known by himself. We are cowards. That's why we accept anybody's answer. Mahavir, Buddha, Christ. We accept their answers. Their answers cannot be our answers. Nobody else's knowledge can be yours. They may have known, but their knowledge is just information for you. You will have to know. Only when it is your own, it is knowledge. Otherwise, it will not give you wings. On the contrary, it will hang in your neck like stones. You will become a slave in it. You will not achieve liberation. You will not be set free by it. Says Jesus, truth liberates. Have you seen anybody being liberated by theories? Experience liberates, yes. But theories about every experience? No, never. But the mind is afraid to take the jump. Because mind is made of the same stuff as universe. If you take the jump, you will be lost. You will come to know, but you will know only when you are not. The salt man came to know. He touched the very depth. He reached to the very center. But he couldn't come back. Even if he comes, how he will relate? Even if he comes, his language will belong to the center, to the depth. And your language belongs to the bank, to the periphery. There is no possibility of any communication. He cannot say anything meaningfully. He can remain only silent, meaningfully, significantly. If he says something, he himself will feel guilty, because he will immediately know whatsoever he knows has not been transferred through the words. His experience is left behind. Only words have gone to you. Dead, still, empty. Words can be communicated, but not truth. It can only be indicated. The man can say to you, "You also come." He can give you an invitation and take a jump with me into the ocean. But you are very clever. You will say, first answer the question. Unless, how do I know that you are right? Let me first consider and think and brood and ponder. Then I will follow. When my mind is convinced, then I will take the jump. But mind is never convinced, cannot be convinced. Mind is nothing but a process of doubt. It can never be convinced. It can go on arguing infinitely. Because whatsoever you say, it can create an argument around it. Once I was traveling with Maulana Shruti. On a station, on a stop, a newcomer came into the compartment. She may have known Nasruddin. She said, "Hello." They greeted each other. And then he said, "How you are, Nasruddin?" Nasruddin said, "Fine, absolutely fine." Then he said, "And how is your wife?" Nasruddin said, "She's also fine. Thank you. And how are your children?" Nasruddin said, "They all are very well. Thank you." I was surprised when the man left on another stop. I asked Nasruddin, "What is the matter? Because I know well, you don't have any wife. You don't have any children." Nasruddin said, "I also know, but why create an argument? Many times, Buddhas have nodded to you. Just not create any arguments. They have remained silent, just not to create any argument. They have not said much, but whatsoever they have said has created enough argument around it. You are such. You will web theories, you will spin philosophies, and you will get so engrossed in them, you will completely forget that the ocean is just near. You will completely forget that the ocean exists. Philosophers completely forget what life is. They go on thinking and thinking and thinking in astray, because mind is a distance from the truth. The more you are in the mind, the far away. The less in the mind, the nearer. If there is no mind, even for a single moment, you have taken the jump. But then you become one with the ocean. So the first thing to remember, if it is a question created by you, not relating to the existential mystery of a universe, it can be answered. Really only mathematical question can be answered. That's why mathematics is such a clear-cut science, because the whole thing is created by man. Mathematics does not exist in the universe. That's why mathematics is the purest science. You can be certain about it. You have created the whole game. Trees are there, but not one tree, two trees, three trees, four trees. Numbers don't exist there. You create the numbers. You create the very base. And then you could ask, how many? If two are added to two, what is the conclusion? What is the result? You can answer four. And the answer will be true, because you have created the whole game. The whole rules, two and two make four. In existence, that's not true. Because in existence, no arithmetic exists. It is wholly man-made affair. So you can go on, and you create as many mathematics, as many arithmetics as you like. Once people thought that there is only one mathematics, now they know there can be many, because man can create. Once people knew that there is only one geometry, Euclid's, now they know that you can create as many geometries as you want, because they are man-created. So now there is Euclidean geometry and non-Euclidean geometry. And many mathematicians have played. Leibniz worked with three digits, 1, 2, 3. In Leibniz mathematics, 2 plus 2 cannot be 4, because the 4 doesn't exist. 1, 2, 3, only 3 digits are there. So in Leibniz mathematics, 2 plus 2 will become 10. Because after the 3 comes 10. The 4 doesn't exist. Einstein worked with 2 digits, 1 and 2. So 2 plus 2 in Einstein's mathematics will be 11. And they are all right, because the whole game is man-made. It is up to you. There is no inner necessity in believing in 9 or 10 digits, except that man has 10 fingers. So people started counting on the fingers. That's why 10 became the basic unit all over the world. Otherwise, there is no necessity. Mathematics is a thought product. You can ask a question and the right answer can be given to you. But except mathematics, everything moves into the mysterious. If it belongs to life, no answer can be given. And whatsoever you say will be destructive, because the whole cannot be said. Words are so narrow, tunnel-like, you cannot force the sky in it. It is impossible. Second thing to remember, that when you ask something to a master is not a philosopher. He is not a thinker. He knows, he is a seer. When you ask something to a master, don't look and don't wait for his answer, because he is the answer. When you ask something, don't be attentive towards the answer, be attentive towards the master. Because he is the answer, he is not going to give you any answer. His presence is the answer. But there we miss. You go and you ask a question, your whole mind is attentive to the question and you are waiting to the answer. And the master, his whole being, his presence is the answer. If you look at him, if you watch him, you will receive an indication. His silence, the way he looks at you in that moment, the way he walks, the way he behaves, the way he remains silent or talks. The master is the answer, because it is the indication. The master can show you the truth, but cannot say it. And your mind always obsessed with the answer, what he is going to say. If you go to a master, learn to be attentive to his presence. Don't be too much head-oriented. And don't insist, because every answer can be given only when the time is right. Don't insist, because it is not a question of your insistence. A right thing can be given only when you are ready. When you are right. So when you are near a master, you can ask a question, but then wait. You have asked, then he knows. Even if you had not asked, he knows that what is troubling you within. But he cannot give you right now. You may not be ready. And if you are not ready and something is given, it will not reach. Because only in a certain readiness, certain things penetrate you. When you are right, you can understand. When you are ready, you are open, receptive. The answer will be given, not in words. The master will reveal it in many ways. He can do it. He can devise many methods to indicate it. But then you will have to be ready. Just because you have asked a question doesn't mean that you are ready. You can ask a question. Even children can ask, raise questions so mysterious that even a Buddha will be unable to answer them. But just by being asked, just by that you are articulate to form a question, does not mean that you are ready. Because questions come out of many, many sources. Sometimes you are simply curious. A master is not there to fulfill your curiosities, because they are childish. Sometimes you really never meant it. Just by the way you asked, you were not concerned. And you are not going to use the answer in any way. somebody is dead and simply you ask the question, what is death? And by the next moment you have forgotten it. Curiosity is one thing. It is childish. No master is going to waste his breath on your curiosities. When you ask a certain thing, it may be just intellectual, philosophic. You are interested, but intellectually. You would like a question just to become more knowledgeable, but your being will remain unaffected. Then a master is not interested, because he is interested only in your being. When you ask a question in such a way as if your life and death depends on it, if you don't receive the answer, you will miss. Your whole being will remain hungry for it. You are thirsty. Your whole being is ready to receive it. And if the answer is given, you will digest it. It will become your blood and your bones and move into your very beat of the heart. Only then a master will be ready to answer. You ask a question, then the master will try to help you to become ready to receive the answer. Your question and the master's answer may have a great gap. You ask today and he may answer you after 12 years, because you have to be ready to receive it. You have to be open, not closed. And you have to be ready to absorb it to the very depth of your being. Now try to understand this parable. At the death of a parishioner, Master Dogo, accompanied by his disciple Zengen, visited the bereaved family. Without taking time to express a word of sympathy, Zengen went up to the coffin, rapped on it, and asked Dogo, is he really dead? The first thing, when death is there, you have to be very respectful, because death is no ordinary phenomenon. It is the most extraordinary phenomenon in the world. Nothing is more mysterious than death. The death reaches to the very center of the existence. And when a man is dead, you are moving on sacred ground. It is the holiest moment possible. No, ordinary curiosities cannot be allowed. They are disrespectful. In the East particularly, death is respected more than life. And the East has lived long to come to this conclusion. In the West, life is more respected than death. Hence so much tension, so much worry, and so much anguish, so much madness. Why? If you respect life more, you will be afraid of death. And then death will look antagonistic, the enemy. And if death is the enemy, you will remain tense your whole life. Because death can happen any moment. You don't accept it. You reject it. And you cannot destroy it. death cannot be destroyed. You can reject it. You can deny. You can be afraid, scared. But it is there, just by the corner. Always with you, like a shadow. You will be trembling your whole life. And you are trembling. And the fear, all fears, if search deeply, you will find the fear of death. Whenever you are afraid, something has given you an indication of death. If your bank goes bankrupt, and you are filled with fear and trembling, anxiety, that too is the anxiety about death, because your bank balance was nothing but a safety against death. Now you are more open, vulnerable. Now who will protect you if death knocks at the door? If you become ill, if you become old, then who is going to take care of you? The guarantee was there in the bank, and the bank has gone bankrupt. You cling to a prestige, power, position, because when you are in a position, you are so significant that you will be more protected by people. When you are not in power, you become so important that nobody will bother in any way who you are. When you are in power, you have friends, family, followers. When you are not in power, everybody leaves. There was a protection. Somebody was there to care. Now nobody cares. Whatsoever you are afraid, if you search deeply, you will always find the shadow of death somewhere. You cling to a husband. You are afraid he may leave. Are you cling to a wife, afraid she may leave you? What is the fear? Is it really the fear of a divorce, or it is the fear of death? It is the fear of death, because in divorce you become alone. The other gives a protection, a feeling that you are not alone, somebody else is with you. In moments when somebody else will be needed, you have somebody to look for. And the wife has left, and the husband has left, now you are left alone, a stranger. Who will protect you? Who will care for you when you are ill? Not when people are young. They need wife and husband more. But when they are old, they need more. When you are young, it is a sexual relationship. The more you become old, it becomes more a life relationship. Because now if the other leaves you, death immediately is there. Wherever you are afraid, try to find out, and you will find somewhere death hiding behind. All fear is of death. Death is the only fear source. In the West, people are very much scared, worried, anxious, because continuously you have to fight against death. You love life, you respect life. That's why in the West, old people are not respected. Young people are respected. Because the old people means they have moved towards death more than you. They are already in the grip. Youth is respected in the West. And youth is a transitory phenomenon. It is already passing from your hands. In the East, old men are respected, because in the East, death is respected. And because in the East, death is respected, there is no fear about death. Life is just a part. Death is the culmination. Life is just the process. Death is the crescendo. Life is just moving. Death is the reaching. And both are one. So what you will respect more, the way or the goal? The process or the flowering? Death is the flower. Life is nothing but the tree. And the tree is there for the flower. The flower is not there for the tree. And the tree should be happy. And the tree should dance when the flower comes. Death is accepted, not only accepted, welcomed. It is a divine guest. When it knocks at the door, it means the universe is ready to receive you back. In the East, we respect death. And this young man's James Gain just reached, without even expressing a word of sympathy, respect. He simply became curious. Not only that, he was very disrespectful. He tapped on the coffin and asked, "Dogo, is he really dead?" His question is beautiful, but not in the right moment. The question is right, but the moment he has chosen is wrong. To be curious before death is childish. One has to be respectful, silent. That is the only way to have a rapport with the phenomenon. When somebody dies, it is really something very deep happening. If you can just sit there and meditate, many things will be revealed to you. Questioning is foolish. When death is there, why not meditate? Questioning may be just a trick to avoid the thing. It may be just a safety measure, not to look at death directly. I have watched. When people go to the to burn or to cremate somebody, they start talking too much there. At the cremation ground, they discuss many philosophical things. In my childhood, I loved it very much to follow everybody. Whosoever will die, I will be there. Even my parents became very much afraid. They said, "Why you go? We even don't know that man. There is no need to go." I said, "That is not the point. The man is not the concern. Death. It is such a beautiful phenomenon and one of the so mysterious. One should not miss." So the moment I will hear that somebody has died, I was there. Always watching, waiting, witnessing what is happening. And I watched the people discussing many things. Philosophical problems. What is death? And somebody saying that nobody dies. The innermost self is immortal. And discussing Upanishads, Gita, and quoting authorities, and I started feeling that they are avoiding. Just being engaged in a discussion, they are avoiding the phenomena that is happening. They are not looking at the dead man. And the thing is there, and death is there, and you are discussing about it. What a fool. You have to be silent. If you can be silent when death is there, you will suddenly see many things. Because death is not just a person is stopping breathing. Many things are happening. When a person dies, his aura starts subsiding. If you are silent, you can feel it. An energy force, a vital energy field subsiding, getting back to the center. When a child is born, just the opposite happens. When a child is born, the aura starts spreading. It starts near the navel. Just as if you throw a pebble in a silent lake, the ripples start. They go on spreading. They go on spreading. Breath when a child is born is just a pebble in the lake. When the child breathes, the navel center is hit. The first pebble has been thrown in the silent lake. And then go on. Your whole life you go on spreading. Near about the age of 35, your aura is complete at the peak. And then it started subsiding. When a person dies, it goes back to the navel. When it reaches to the navel, it becomes a concentrated energy, a concentrated light. If you are silent, you can feel it. You will feel a pull. If you sit near a dead man, you will feel as if a subtle breeze is blowing towards the dead man, and you are being pulled. And the dead man is contracting his whole life, the whole field that he was. And many things start happening around a dead man. If he loved a person very deeply, that means he has given a part of his life energy to that person. When a person dies, immediately that part that he has given to the another person leaves that person and moves to the dead man. If you die here and your lover lives in Hong Kong, something will leave from your lover immediately, because you have given a part of your life, and that part will come back to you. That's why when a loved one dies, you feel something has left you also. Something in you has died also. A deep wound, a deep gap will exist now. Whenever a lover dies, something in the beloved also dies, because they were involved into each other. And if you have loved many, many people, for example, a person like Dogo dies, or a Buddha, from all over the universe, energy moves back to the center. It is a universal phenomenon. Because he is involved in many, many lives, millions of lives. And from everywhere his energy will come back. The vibrations that he has given to many will leave. They will move to the original source. They will become again a concentration near the navel. If you watch, you will feel ripples coming back in a reverse order. And when they are totally concentrated in the navel, you can see a tremendous life, a tremendous light force. And then that center leaves the body. When a man dies, that is simply stopping of the breath, you think he is dead. He's not dead. It takes time. Sometimes, if the person has been involved in millions of lives, it takes many days for him to die. That's why, with sages, with saints, particularly in the East, we never burn their bodies. Only saints are not burnt. Otherwise, everybody is burnt, because others' involvement is not so much. Within minutes, the energy gathers, and they are no more part of this existence. But with saints, the energy takes time. Sometimes it goes on and on. That's why if you go to Shirdi, to Sai Baba's tomb, you will still feel something happening. Still the energy goes on coming. He is so much involved that for many people he is still alive. Sai Baba's tomb is not dead. It is still alive. But the same you will not feel near many tombs. They are dead. By dead I mean they have accumulated all their involvement. They have disappeared. When I am dead, don't bury my body. Don't burn it. Because I will be involved in you, many of you. And if you can feel, then a sage remains alive for many years. Sometimes thousands of years. Because life is not only of the body. Life is an energy phenomenon. It depends on the involvement, how many persons he was involved in. And a person like Buddha is not only involved with persons, he is involved even with trees, birds, animals. His involvement is so deep. If he dies, his death will take at least 500 years. And Buddha is reported to have said that my religion will be a life force only for 500 years. And the meaning is here, because he will be a life force for 500 years. 500 years will take for him to get out of the involvement totally. When death happens, be silent. Watch. All over the world, whenever you pay respect to a dead man, you become silent. You remain silent for 2 minutes. Without knowing why, this tradition has been continued all over the world. Why silence? The tradition is meaningful. You may not know, and you may not be aware, and your silence may be filled with inner chattering. Or you may do it just like a ritual, but that is up to you. But the secret is there. Without taking time to express a word of sympathy, Zengen went up to the coffin, rapped on it, and asked Dojo, "Is he really dead?" His question is right. Time is not right. He has chosen a wrong opportunity. This is not the moment to talk about it. this is the moment to be with it. And the man who is dead must have been someone very deep, otherwise Dozo is not going to pay his respects. Dozo is an enlightened man. The disciple who is dead must have been something, and Dozo was there to do something more for him. A master can help you when you are alive. A master can help you when you are dead even more, because in death deep surrendering happens. In life you always resisting, fighting even with your masters, not surrendering, or surrendering half-heartedly, which means nothing. But when you are dying, surrender is more easier, because death and surrender are the same processes. When the whole body is dying, you can surrender easily. Fight is difficult. Resistance is difficult. Already your resistance is being broken. Your body is moving into a let go. That is what death is. Those of us there for something special, and this disciple asks a question, the question is right, but the time is not right. "I won't say," said Dozo. "Well," insisted Jingen, "I am not saying, and that's final," said the master. First thing, what can be said about death? How can you say anything about death? For any word, it is not possible to carry the meaning of death. What this word death means, in fact, it means nothing. What do you mean when you use the word death? It is simply a door beyond which we don't know what happens. We see a man disappearing inside a door. We can look up to the door and then the man simply disappears. Your word death can give only the meaning of the door. But what happens really beyond the door, because door is not the thing, door is to be passed through. And what happens? Where? One who disappears from the door and we cannot see beyond, what happens to him? And what is this door? Just a stopping of the breath? Is the breath the whole of life? Don't you have anything more than the breath? Breath stops, body deteriorates. If you are body and breath alone, then there is no problem. Then death is nothing. It is not a door to anything. It is simply a stopping, not a disappearance. It is just like a clock. The clock was ticking, working. Then it has stopped. You don't ask where that tick-tick has gone. It is meaningless. It has gone nowhere. It has not gone at all. It is simply stopped. It was a mechanism. Something has gone wrong in the mechanism. You can repair the mechanism, it will tick tick again. Is death just like a stopping clock? A clock is stopping just like that? Then it is not a mystery. It is nothing really. But how life can disappear so easily? Life is not mechanical. Life is awareness. The clock is not aware. You listen the tick-tick. The clock has never listened it. But your own heartbeat you can listen. Who is this listener? If only the heartbeat is life, then who is this listener? If breath is the only life, you can be aware of your breath. That's why all Eastern techniques of meditation use breath awareness as a subtle technique. Because if you become aware of the breathing, then who is this awareness? It must be something beyond than breath, because you can look at it. The looker cannot be the object. You can witness it. You can close an eyes and you can see your breath going in and coming out. Who is this seer, the witnessing? It must be a separate force. It does not depend on breathing. When the breathing disappears, it is a stopping of a clock. But where goes this awareness? Where this awareness moves into. Death is a door. It is not a stopping. Awareness moves, body remains on the door, just as you have come and left your shoes on the door. The body is left outside the temple. And your awareness enters the temple. It is the most subtle phenomena. Life is nothing before it. Basically, life is just a preparation to die. And only those who are wise, who learn in their life how to die. If you don't know how to die, you have missed the whole meaning of life. It is a preparation, it is a training, it is a discipline. Life is not the end, it is just a discipline to learn the art how to die. But you are afraid. You are scared. The very word death and you start trembling. That means you have not yet known life, because life never dies. Life cannot die. Somewhere you have got identified with the body, with the mechanism. The mechanism is to die. The mechanism cannot be eternal, because the mechanism depends on many things. It is a conditioned phenomenon. Awareness is unconditional. It doesn't depend on anything. It can float like a cloud in the sky. It has no roots. It is not cast. It is never born, so it can never die. Whenever someone dies, you have to be meditative near. Because the temple is just near and it is holy ground. Don't be childish. Don't bring curiosities. Be silent so you can watch and see something very, very meaningful is happening. Don't miss the moment. And when death is there, why ask about it? Why not look at it? Why not watch it? Why not move with it few steps? I won't say, said Dojo. Well, insisted Zengen, I am not saying, and that's final, said Dojo. On their way back to the temple, the furious Zengen turned on Dojo and threatened, "By God, if you don't answer my question, why? I will beat you." This is possible in Zen, that even a disciple can beat the master. Because Zen is very true to life and very authentic. A Zen master does not create the phenomena around him that I am holier than you. He does not say that I am so superior. How one who has achieved can say that I am superior and you are inferior? The disciple can think that he is superior, but the master cannot claim any superiority, because superiority is only claimed by inferiority. Superiority is only claimed by the ego, which is impotent, inferior. Strength is claimed only by weakness. When you are uncertain, you claim certainty. When you are ill, you claim health. When you don't know, you claim knowledge. Your claims are simply to hide the truth. A master claims nothing. He cannot say, "I am superior." It is foolish. How a wise man can say, "I am superior"? So a Zen master even allows this, that a disciple can hit him, and he can enjoy the whole thing. Nobody else in the world has done that way. That's why Zen masters are rare. You cannot find rarer flowers than them. He is so superior, really, that he allows you even to hit him. His superiority is not challenged by it. You cannot challenge him in any way, and you cannot bring him down in any way. He is no more there. He is an empty house. And he knows that a disciple can only be foolish. Nothing else is expected. Because a disciple is ignorant. Compassion is needed. And in ignorance, a disciple is bound to go on doing things which are not proper. Because how an improper person can do proper things? And if you force proper things on an improper person, he will be crippled. His freedom will be cut. And a master is to help you to be free. So it is allowed. In fact, it is not irreverence. In fact, the disciple also loves the master so much, so intimately, that he can come so close. Even hitting a person is a sort of intimacy. You cannot hit anybody. And sometimes it happens that even a child hits his father, or a child slaps the mother. No antagonism is meant. Just the child upsets the mother so deeply and so intimately that he doesn't feel that anything is improper. And the child knows he will be forgiven. So there is no fear. A master forgives infinitely, unconditionally. The disciple was very angry because he asked a very meaningful question. it looked meaningful to him. And he couldn't conceive why Dojo should behave so obstinately and say no. And not only that, he said, this is final and I'm not going to say anything more further. When you ask a question, you ask because of your ego. And when the answer is not given, the ego feels hurt. The disciple was hurt. The ego was disturbed. He couldn't believe. And this must have happened before many people. They were not alone. There were many others. There must have been. When someone is dead, many people must have gathered there. And before those people, the master said, no, and this is final. I am not going to say anything. They all must have thought this, that disciple is just a fool, asking irrelevant questions. He must have felt angry. He must have felt boiling. When he found the master alone coming back to the monastery, he said, by God, if you don't answer my question, why? I will beat you. All right, said Dozo, beat away. You'll be finished with it. If you are angry, then be finished with it. A master is always ready to bring all that is in you out, even your negativity. Even if you are going to hit him, he will allow you. Who knows? In hitting the master, you may become aware of your negative. You may become aware of your illness, your disease, your madness. In hitting the master, it may become a sudden enlightenment. Who knows? And the master is to help you in every way. So said Dojo, all right, go ahead, beat away. A man of his word, Zengen is left his master a good one. Sometime later, Dozo died, and Zengen still anxious to have his question answered, went to another master, Sekiso, and after relating what had happened, asked the same question of him. Sekiso, as if conspiring with the dead Dojo, would not answer. All masters are always in a secret conspiracy. If they are at all masters, they are always together. Even if they contradict each other, they belong to the same conspiracy. Even sometimes, they say that the other is wrong. They are in a conspiracy. It happened, Buddha or Mahavir, both were contemporaries. And they moved in the same province, Bihar. It is known Bihar because of them. Bihar means their field of movement. They walked all over that part. Sometimes they were in the same village. Once it happened, they were staying in the same roadside inn. Half the inn was engaged by Buddha and half by Mahavir. But they never met each other. And continuously they refuted each other. And disciples used to move from this master to another. it has remained a problem. Why? Buddha even will laugh. He will joke about Mahavir. He will say, that fellow. So he claims that he is enlightened. He claims that he is all-knowing. But I have heard he will say that once it happened, he knocked at a door to beg his food, and there was no one inside. And I have heard that he claims that he is all-knowing, and even this much he couldn't know, that the house is vacant. He goes on joking. He says, once Mahavir walking, he stepped on the tail of a dog, and when the dog jumped and barked, only then he could know that the dog is there, because it was morning and dark. And that fellow says that he is all-knowing. And he goes on joking, many. He cuts many jokes against Mahavir. They are beautiful. They are in a conspiracy, and this has not been understood. Neither by Jains nor by Buddhists. They have missed the whole point. They think they are against each other, and Jains and both Buddhists have remained against each other for these 2000 years. They are not against. They are playing a role, and they are trying to help people. There are two different types. Somebody can be helped by Mahavir and somebody can be helped by Buddha. And the person who can be helped by Buddha cannot be helped by Mahavir. That person has to be taken away from Mahavir. And the person who can be helped by Mahavir cannot be helped by Buddha. That person has to be taken away from Buddha. That's why they talk against each other. It is a conspiracy. But everybody should be helped, and there are two different types, absolutely different types. How can they be against each other? Nobody ever enlightened is against any other enlightened person, cannot be. He may talk so, because he knows the other will understand. Mahavir is never reported to have said anything about Buddha's jokes that he was saying here and there. He kept completely silent. That was his way. By being completely silent, not even refuting, he must leave that fool to himself. By being completely silent, not saying anything, because every day reports will come, people will come and they will say, he has said this. And he will not even talk about it. And that's how it fits, because he was very old, 30 years older than Buddha. And it was not good for him to come down and fight with a young man. This is how young fools are. But he was the same against other teachers who were older than him. He was talking about them. Talking against them, arguing against them. They are in a conspiracy. They have to be. Because you cannot understand. They have to divide paths. Because you cannot understand that life exists through opposites, they have to choose opposites. They have to stick to one thing. And then they have to say, for you, remember, that all others are wrong. Because if they say everybody is right, you will be more confused. You are already enough confused. If they say, yes, I am also right, Mahavir is also right, Buddha is also right, everybody is right, you will immediately leave them. You will think, this man can't help. Because we are already confused, we don't know what is right and what is wrong. And we had come to this man to know exactly what is right and what is wrong. So they stick to something and they say, this is right and everything else is wrong. Knowing all the way that there are millions of ways to reach the way. Knowing all along that there are millions of paths which reach to the final path. But if they say that millions of paths reach, you will be simply confused. This disciple, Zengen, was in a trouble because his master, Dodo, died. He never expected that this is going to be so soon. Disciples always feel in much difficulty when masters die. When masters are there, they fool around and waste time. When masters are dead, then they are in a real difficulty and fix what to do. The question remains. The problem remained. The puzzle was as it was before. The disciple has not yet come to know what death is. And this Dodo is dead. He went to another master, Sekiso. And after relating the whole thing, what has happened, asked the same question of him. Sekiso, as if conspiring with the dead Dodo, would not answer. By God, cried Zengen, you too? I'm not saying, said Sikis, and that is final. They are doing something, they are creating a situation. They are saying, be silent before death. Don't ask the question, because when you ask, you come to the surface. You become superficial. These questions are not questions to be asked. These questions are to be penetrated, lived, meditated. You have to move into them. If you want to know death, die. That's the only way to know. If you want to know life, live. You are alive but not living. And you will die. And you will not die. Because everything is lukewarm in you. You live, not exactly, just drag. Somehow you pull yourself. Live as intensely as possible. Burn from both the ends your candle of life. Burn it so intensely. If it is finished in 1 second, it is okay. But at least you would have known what it is. Because only intensity penetrates. And if you can live an intense life, you will have a different quality of death, because you will die intensely. As life, so will be the death. If you live dragging, you will die dragging. You will miss life, you will miss death also. Make life as intense as possible. Put everything at stake. Why worry? Why be worried about the future? This moment is there. You bring your total existence in it. Live intensely. Totally, wholly. and this moment will become a revelation. And if you know life, you will know death. This is the secret key. If you know life, you will know death. If you ask what death is, it means you have not lived. Because they, deep down, they are one. What is the secret of life? The secret of life is death. If you love, what is the secret of love? Death. If you meditate, what is the secret of meditation? Death. Whatsoever beautiful and intense happens, always happens through death. You die. You simply bring yourself totally in it and die for everything else. You become so intense that you are not there. Because if you are there, then the intensity cannot be total. Then two are there. You love, and lover is there, then love cannot be intense. You love so deeply, so totally, the lover disappears. You are just the energy moving. You will know love. You will know life. You will know death. These three words are very meaningful. Love, life and death. Their secret is the same. And if you understand them, there is no need to meditate. Because you don't understand them, that's why meditation is needed. Meditation is just a spare wheel. If you love really, it becomes meditation. You don't love, then you will have to meditate. If you live really, it becomes meditation. If you don't live, then you will have to meditate. Then something else will have to be added. But this is the problem. If you cannot love deeply, how you can meditate deeply? If you cannot live deeply, how can you meditate deeply? Because the problem is neither love, nor meditation, nor death. The problem is how to move to the depth. Deepness is the question. In anything, move deeply. And on the periphery will be life, in the center will be death. Even if you watch a flower, totally, forgetting everything. In watching the flower, you will die in the flower. You will have a merger, a melting. Suddenly you will feel you are not. Only the flower is. Live each moment as if this is the last moment. And nobody knows, it may be the last. Both the masters were trying to bring him a awareness. Said Sikiso, by God, when he heard the disciple telling him the whole story, he also said, no, I'm not saying. And that is final. He repeated the same words of Dojo. First time the disciple missed, but not the second time. At that very instant, Zengen experienced an awakening. A satori happened. Suddenly a lightning. He became aware. First time he missed. It is almost always so. First time you will miss. Because you don't know what is happening. First time, your old habits of mind will not allow you to see. That's why the second master, Sikaso, simply repeated the word of Dogo. Simply repeated. He has not changed even a single word. The very line, "I am not saying," he said, and that's final. He again created the same situation. And it was easy to fight with the dozo. It is not easy to fight with seekers. He was not Zengen's master. It was easy to hit dojo. It would not be possible to hit seekers. It is enough that he answers. It is his compassion. He is not bound to answer. An intimacy was there between dojo and this disciple. Sometimes it happens when you are very intimate, you can miss. Because you take things for granted. Sometimes a distance is needed. It depends on persons. Few persons can only learn when a distance is there. Few persons can learn only when there is no distance. There are two types of people. Those who can learn from a distance, they will miss a master. Their own master they will miss. But he prepares them. Many of you are here who have worked in your many lives with many other masters. You have missed them. But they have prepared you to reach to me. Many of you will miss me, but I will have prepared you to reach somebody's answer. An intimacy was there between dojo and this disciple. Sometimes it happens when you are very intimate, you can miss. Because you take things for granted. Sometimes a distance is needed. It depends on persons. Few persons can only learn when a distance is there. Few persons can learn only when there is no distance. There are two types of people. Those who can learn from a distance, they will miss a master. Their own master they will miss. But he prepares them. Many of you are here who have worked in your many lives with many other masters. You have missed them. But they have prepared you to reach to me. Many of you will miss me, but I will have prepared you to reach somebody else.
Osho, and the flowers showered. Discourse number 5, tape 2.
If you love a person, you sit silently with the person. You would not like to chatter. You would like just to hold the hand and live and be silent in that moment. If you chatter, that means you are avoiding the person. Love is not really there. If you love life, chattering will drop. Because every moment is so filled with life, there is no way, no space to chatter. Each moment life is so vitally flooding you, where is the time to gossip and chatter? Each moment you live totally and mind becomes silent. eat and eat so totally, because life is entering you through food, mind becomes silent. Drink and drink totally, life is entering through water. It will quench your thirst. Move with it as it touches your thirst, as the thirst disappears. Be silent and watch. How can you chatter when you are drinking a cup of tea? Warm life is flowing within you. Be filled with it. You will be respectful. Hence in Japan, tea ceremonies exist. And every house worth calling a house has a tea room. Just like a temple. Very ordinary thing, tea. And they have raised it to a very holy status. When they enter the tea room, they enter in complete silence, as if it is a temple. They sit silently in the tea room. And then the kettle starts singing. And everybody listens silently. As you are listening to me, the same silence. And the kettle goes on singing millions of songs. Sounds. Omkar, the very mantra of life, and they listen silently. And then the tea is poured. They touch their cups and saucers. They feel grateful that this moment is again given to them. Who knows it will come again or not? Then they smell the tea, the aroma. And they are filled with gratitude. Then they start sipping. And the taste, and the warmth, and the flow, and the merging of their own energy with the energy of the tea, it becomes a meditation. Everything can become a meditation if you live it totally and intensely. And then your life becomes whole. Suddenly, listening to the same words again, Zengen realized that I was wrong and my master was right. I was wrong because I thought he is not answering. He is not paying attention to my question. He is not caring about me at all and my inquiry. My ego was hurt, but I was wrong. He was not hitting my ego. I was not at all the question. The very nature of death is such. Suddenly he is awakened. This is called Satori. It is a special enlightenment. There exists in no other language an equivalent word to Satori. It is a specially Zen thing. It is not Samadhi, it is Samadhi. It is not Samadhi because it can happen in very ordinary moments. Drinking tea, taking a walk, looking at a flower, listening to the frog jumping in the pond. It can happen in very ordinary moments, so it is not like a samadhi about which Patanjali talks. Patanjali will be simply surprised that a frog jumps into the pond and the sound of it, and somebody becomes enlightened. Patanjali will not be able to believe it. that a dry leaf drops from the tree. Jig-jag. Moves on the wind a little, then falls to the ground and goes fast asleep. And somebody sitting under the tree attained enlightenment. No, Patanjali will not be able to believe it. Impossible. Because he will say samadhi is something exceptional. Samadhi is after much effort, millions of life. And then it happens in a particular posture, siddhasana. It happens in a particular state of body and mind. Satori is samadhi and yet not samadhi. It is a glimpse. And a glimpse in the very ordinary of the extraordinary. Samadhi. Happening in ordinary moments. And a sudden thing. It is not gradual. You don't move in degrees. It is just like water coming to a boiling point, 100 degrees, and the jump, and the water becomes vapor and merges into the sky, and you cannot trace where it has gone. Up to 99 degrees, it is boiling and boiling and boiling, but not evaporating. From the 99 degree, it can fall back. It was only hot. But it passes the 100th degree and there is a sudden jump. The situation is the same. No. Zengin became hot but couldn't evaporate. It was not enough. He needed one more situation. Or he may have needed in a need of many more situations. Then with Sikizo, the same situation, and suddenly something is hit. Suddenly the focus changes, the gestalt. Up to now he was thinking that it is his question which Dogo has not replied. He was egocentric. He was thinking, it is me who has been neglected by my master. He was not careful enough about me and my inquiries. He didn't pay enough attention to me and my inquiry. Suddenly he realizes that it was not me that was neglected, or the master was indifferent, or he didn't pay attention. No, it was not me. It is the question itself. It cannot be answered. Before mysteries of life and death, one has to be silent. The gestalt changes. He can see the whole thing. Hence, he attains a glimpse. Whenever gestalt changes, you attain a glimpse. That glimpse is satori. It is not final. You will lose it again. You will not become a Buddha by satori. That's why I say it is a samadhi, and yet not a samadhi. It is an ocean in a teacup. Ocean, yes, and yet not ocean. Samadhi in a capsule. It gives you a glimpse, an opening, as if you are moving in a dark night in a forest lost. You don't know where you are moving, where is the path, whether you are moving in right direction or not, and then there is suddenly a lightning. In a moment, you see everything. and then the light disappears. You cannot read in a lighting because it is a moment. You cannot sit under the sky and start reading in a lighting. No, it is not a constant flow. Samadhi is such you can read in its light. Satori is like lightning. You can see a glimpse of the whole. All that is there, and then it disappears. But you will be not the same again. It is not final enlightenment, but a great step towards it. Now you know. You have a glimpse. Now you can search more of it. You have tasted it. Now Buddha's belief. Now if Zengen meets Dojo again, he will not hit him. He will fall on his feet and ask for his forgiveness. Now he will weep millions of tears. Because now he will say, what compassion was Dojo that he allowed him to hit him. He said, oh, okay, go ahead, beat away. If he meets Dojo again, Zengen will not be the same. He has not tasted something which changes. He has not attained the final. The final will be coming. But he has got the sample. Satori is the sample of Patanjali's Samadhi. And it is beautiful that the sample is possible. Because unless you taste it, how can you move towards it? Unless you smell it a little, how can you be attracted and pulled towards it? The glimpse will become a magnetic force. You will never be the same. And you will know something is there. Whether I find it or not, that's up to me. But trust will arise. Satori gives trust and starts a movement, a vital movement in you towards the final enlightenment, that is Samadhi. Enough for